The Max Kellerman Show, the podcast.
Gamesmanship or cheating? I say it's gamesmanship as we're back on the Max Kellerman Show on ESPN Radio and ESPN Plus. Bob Wischusen in for Max. 888-729-3776. The Max Kellerman Show is presented by Progressive Insurance. Guests join us on the Goodyear Hotline. Get you a quick Masters update. And again, the birdies are flying around out there. Justin Rose rebounded on the back nine. He is now done. Leader in the clubhouse as things stand right now at minus seven. But the cavalry charge is on. Mark Leishman also done for the day at minus five. Now Tony Finau and Justin Thomas are also at five under par. They're only two back. Tony Finau is 7-under on his round today. Justin Thomas, 6-under on his round today. So they're only two shots behind. And among the group at 4-under par, now three shots back, is Bernd Wiesberger. Cam Smith has made a move, 6-under through 14 today, 4-under overall. Brian Harman still sitting at 4-under. He's 1-under on his round today. And Jordan Spieth is part of the group at minus 3 along with Patrick Reed. So that's basically your top 10 at the Masters. They're chasing Justin Rose, but they are not chasing a target nearly as far off in the distance as they thought they might be based on how Rose played yesterday, because, again, on a far easier golf course today. It looks to me like this golf course is at least a shot, maybe two, maybe more, easier than it was playing yesterday. Justin Rose shot a round 7 strokes worse today than he did yesterday. So you can make an argument on an easier golf course, whatever metric you want to use. I think Justin Rose was, in effect, 9 to 10 shots worse today than he was yesterday. That's how unconscious he was yesterday, and that's how much he just tried to scrape it around today. But he has brought the entire field right back into it. If he went out there today and played the way the rest of these guys are playing and doubled up a 7-under par round yesterday with, say, a 5-under par round today, and he would be a 12-under, I mean, he might have a 4-shot lead going into the weekend. He might have run away and hid. But the round that he played today, he led everybody back into it. And now there are some household names towards the top of the leaderboard chasing Justin Rose, and it sets up for a very interesting weekend. So we'll keep you updated on the Masters. But something else, a big topic on sports radio, at least where I live here in New York, not sure around the country if it got the same amount of attention. But Michael Conforto, bases loaded, ninth inning against the Marlins yesterday, leans into one. And he definitely leaned into one. And there was all of a sudden this, you know, like an avalanche of criticism. Like Michael Conforto should somehow be ashamed of himself because he let a ball graze his elbow and the Mets won a game. And in my opinion, the argument that needs to be had is with the umpires that blew the call. Like the broadcasters on the game came out and it seemed almost as if they were taking shots at Conforto when I think what they were doing was criticizing the umpiring. And I think that really is where the criticism needs to be met. My question would be, when you're watching a game, do you get really angry if someone does something that isn't necessarily a violation of the rules, but violation of the unwritten rule? And there are so many unwritten rules, probably more in baseball than there are in any other sport. How much does it bother you? And where is that line between I am out and out cheating or I am doing what I feel like I need to do to flirt with the rules to help my team win? And to me, as a broadcaster, because I call a ton of football, I do the Jets in New York on the radio and also call college football for ESPN. I have never been shy about making my opinion known if I think a ref, an official, an umpire has made a bad call or missed a call. And to me, that would be here, if I were broadcasting the game, where my main criticism would be. To draw a football parallel, let's say you see a defensive back flat out beat on a go route by a wide receiver. And what does that defensive back do? He reaches out. He grabs. He might grab the jersey. See it all the time, right? So like a jersey tug by a DB to slow down a wide receiver who's got him beat. Is that a violation of the rules? Absolutely. Is it something you expect a DB to do? Absolutely. Is that a spot where you then expect a referee to throw a flag? Absolutely. And to me, that's all part of sports. So I thought it was ridiculous that there was so much, you know, kind of an avalanche of criticism towards Michael Conforto who couldn't buy a hit through the first three or four games of the season and knew he couldn't buy a hit and was in a two-strike count and decided to just, when a slider came, lean in, let it graze his elbow, and then put the onus on the umpire to make the call. But to me, he's doing what he needed to do and what he felt he needed to do to help his team win a game. But where is that line? Where for you as a fan is the line between cheating or gamesmanship? I mean, this is a sport where you want to have, you know, terrible things to say about Michael Conforto for leaning into a pitch, but the same sport's got a guy in Phil Niekro on the Hall of Fame that spent his whole career doctoring the baseball. So there are all different ways for guys to flirt with the rules and then put the onus on an umpire or a ref or an official to make the right call. And the further example of this that drives me bananas is the idea that now we need to expand replay. Because they were able to go to replay to confirm that Conforto had been hit, but what was not reviewable was his intent. It's not reviewable that it would have been a strike if it hadn't hit him. It's not reviewable because that's a judgment call, right? That's a judgment call on the part of the umpire in that spot as to whether or not Conforto, you know, that the pitch would have been a strike. And to me, again, when you start to talk about bringing judgment calls into replay, man, that drives me absolutely bananas. You know, none of that. That's where the NFL went wrong 2 years ago when we had the Roby Coleman pass interference in the NFC Championship game, and it was such a blatant miss by the officials that the NFL came up with the idea that you could now challenge pass interference. And everyone knew that was going to be a disaster. Everyone knew that was something that should not be the purview of replay, should not be challengeable. It turned out to be every bit the disaster we all knew it would be. It was a one-year experiment, and they got rid of it. And I think what happens now with replay in sports is a sport sees a call blown. That's a 1 in 1,000 call that gets blown by a ref, and they react to the 1 in 1,000 blown call by now thinking you have to include that in replay. When what you really need to do is say, we need to make sure we never have another umpire or ref in that spot to blow that call. 888-SAY-ESPN, 888-729-3776. Squeeze some calls in. Let's get to Brad in Compton. Joins us next here on ESPN Radio. Bob in for Max. What's up, Brad?
How you doing, Bob?
How are you?
Good, good. So, two things. The umpire was about to ring him up.
Yep.
He started to call it a strike. And second, I know you're talking about pass interference as a judgment call, but we have a strike zone, a box. If they have to review it, they could see that it was a strike. He was about to ring him up. I mean, so now you could just put on an arm guard and stand in the box and get hit on strike.
But that box isn't official. That box is for TV. It's still the purview of the umpire as to what is a ball, what is a strike. That's still a judgment call. Now, at some point, we may end up with robotic umpires. We may end up with an electronic strike zone, and a computer tells you what a ball and a strike is. But that box, that's just for us. We're putting that on TV so you have a perspective, but that's not official.
If you see the replay, he was calling it a strike.
Oh, no, you're right. He was about to call it a strike. But then, it's a judgment call. And when you get into the world of allowing judgment calls to be the purview of replay, to me, now you're going someplace where replay was never intended to go. We've already gone someplace where replay was never intended to go. It's just taking it even more in that direction. And I have to admit, like, I hate that. Bob Wischusen, in for Max, the Max Kellerman Show on ESPN Radio and ESPN Plus. If you're on hold, stay right there. We'll get back to some more calls coming up at 888-SAY-ESPN, 888-729-3776. We had Dan Orlovsky on in hour number one. We want to keep it rolling with the NFL Live crew because Mina Kimes, ESPN NFL analyst, is with us now on the Goodyear Hotline. And Mina, not only as like Dan Orlovsky's college football partner, but as a regular viewer of NFL Live and then a follower of you guys on Twitter, I like the fact that you somehow somehow are able to balance, it seems like, your life with being an NFL expert and analyst and also Dan Orlovsky's life coach. Like, I don't know where he would be without you. He can't figure out what to eat, what to wear, like what should be in the basket at Halloween or on the dinner table at Thanksgiving, it seems, until he runs it past you and you somehow put it in perspective for him. The man would literally be lost if you weren't in his life, I believe.
You know, to use draft parlance, because it's that time of the year, I don't think Dan's very coachable when it comes to eating, because the man has the worst. He's an incredible analyst, a great colleague and friend, but the man has the worst opinions about food, maybe of anyone I've ever met, and he won't be moved off his spot. It's quite unbelievable.
You know what? Let me ask you this. Of all of the awful opinions, just to put it in perspective, what do you think the worst is? There are so many examples to choose from, but what's the one that just is the Mount Everest of terrible Dan Orlovsky opinions about food?
Well, he hasn't put seasoning on his food.
Yeah.
I think you got to just start there. Like, it is remarkable. Like, he just loves bland chicken. It's really unbelievable. His favorite color of food is just tan.
Yeah.
I mean, I don't know. I think I really want to take him to a Korean restaurant and live tape the experience. I think it would be so funny, and I'm not sure he'd survive.
Imagine now, juxtapose that with being his, like, fat guy, condiment-loving play-by-play guy the entire college football season. And imagine what my life is like as well. Not good.
Befuddled, I
yeah,
imagine.
No, yeah, it's not good. But there's a reason he looks like what he looks like and I look like what I look like. So I got to give him credit for that. Hey, have you finally, do you think, in your role as well of telling everybody to shut up about Russell Wilson, gotten them all to shut up? Or is there still enough buzz out there with Russell Wilson to make you angry?
I think I've gotten them to shut up for this year.
Okay.
So, yeah, I think, you know, you've kind of run out of destinations for Wilson. With some of the moves that teams have made for quarterbacks. You know, from the beginning, the point that I was making, sort of debunking or saying why there wouldn't be a trade, it wasn't about Russell Wilson. You know, obviously he's got issues with the team, and, you know, there's a reason he put out a list of destinations. It was from the team perspective. It didn't make sense to me for Seattle, not only because of the massive, you know, dead cap hit, but because there weren't any quarterbacks out there. And then there weren't any teams offering a draft pick with a path to a quarterback like the Jets or Miami. That would have made it more realistic. I mean, Chicago was the team that was persistent, but what did they have to offer Seattle? If they had actually done that trade, they should all be fired.
Yeah, I actually wanted to fire the general manager in Chicago and in Washington for not being more involved with the Sam Darnold discussion. Like, how could you sit there with Andy Dalton and Ryan Fitzpatrick as your two respective quarterbacks and have your attitude be like, I'm good. Like, we've checked the box.
Yeah.
We have our quarterbacks. We are all good. Why do we need to be involved with maybe going out and getting a 23-year-old quarterback of the future? I mean, to me, that was malpractice in another way.
Well, you know, I actually think Washington, I would disagree a little bit, because Ryan Fitzpatrick has been significantly better than Darnold. I'm laughing just because it is hilarious that every year Ryan Fitzpatrick seems to outperform expectations and keep these rookies on the bench. But that's a team that the phase that they're in of the sort of building process, I understand why they might want to sit out this year, wait till next year to pursue the quarterback of the future. Chicago's the one that befuddles me, because you got to think the front office there is on their last shot, right? And you're really going to settle for Andy Dalton with your last shot? Now, that said, Bob, the draft is still around the corner, and they could be an active mover, and they're one of the both of those teams are ones that we're monitoring to trade up, so I wouldn't count them out just yet.
Mina Kimes all over the NFL for us, and also all over Dan Orlovsky's life, which helps him in ways that he can't really even quantify. Joining us here, Bob Wischusen in for Max, the Max Kellerman Show on ESPN Radio. All right, do you think the draft now really starts at 3? For San Francisco, is there mystery to you about who they might pick? Is it the Falcons maybe either staying put, not taking a quarterback, making a trade? Like, where do you think this draft really starts to get intriguing?
You know, there's so much noise about San Francisco and Mac Jones that I'm tempted to say 4. But Kyle Shanahan is going to Justin Fields' pro day. I don't think we can rule anything out, especially given the draft haul they gave up for that pick. So there's still a lot of intrigue around three, even with the Mac Jones rumors. I find four to be the most fascinating pick because, and I just tweeted this earlier, Atlanta really can do a number of things, and they're all defensible. Like, they could take a quarterback this year. I would be a little bit confused after they restructured Matt Ryan's contract because it's so hard to shed for 2 years, but I could see them taking their shot on Lance or Fields if they're available. They could trade down, which is what I thought for a while they'd probably do with another team wanting a quarterback. Or they could take Kyle Pitts, you know, who's I think a lot of us are beginning to see as the most talented player in the draft, just player. So Atlanta is the one I've got my eye on because there's just so many good options for that organization.
Yeah, I agree with you. I think Kyle Pitts is going to be, for those that don't know enough about him and are not big college football fans, they're just NFL fans, they will see a tight end drafted at a place where tight ends never get drafted, and they will sit there and say, whoa, like how did my team go for a tight end in the top five? And anybody that knows about Kyle Pitts will turn to that team and say, you have no idea of the potential Hall of Fame level freak that you are getting. This is a different kind of cat that plays that position compared to what you think of as a tight end.
Yeah, and the way teams use tight ends in general has changed so much over the last few years, you know, with Kelce and Waller, not just lining up in line. I think Kyle Pitts is going to be used all over the field as a weapon. He's big enough to develop as a blocker. But you're absolutely right. I mean, they played his highlights during NFL Live the other day. I wanted them to cut my mic because I was gasping so much audibly because he is that remarkable. I mean, I've just not really ever seen anything like it, to be honest. Like, takes me back to, like, maybe, I don't know, Vernon Davis, Kellen Winslow. Like, it is crazy company. And we usually overdo it this time of year with comps. Like, I think people tend to do player comps that are way too good, frankly. But you cannot overdo it with this kid.
Yeah, he is that good. Where do you think the biggest mystery still lies? Like, what team is there, maybe in the top 10, maybe in the top 15, where you're sitting there looking at this draft going, you know what, I have literally no clue what that team might do or where they might go? Because it seems like there's tea leaves that we can read with a lot of these teams. Where's the first team that you get to in the draft where you're like, I got no idea what they might do? They could go in any direction.
I would say after Atlanta, I'm pretty curious about what New England does in the middle of the draft because, you know, we talked about Chicago and Washington as teams that might trade up for a quarterback. I believe New England should trade up for a quarterback. I believe that the way they've built their roster, some of the acquisitions they made in free agency, and the timeline that they're on as an organization supports that. It's not something historically they've done. So I think that's the mystery for me. Are they going to defy some of the precedent with how Bill Belichick's run that team, as they have, frankly, much of this offseason.
Bob Bischusa with Mina Kimes for another minute or two here on ESPN Radio, filling in for Max Kellerman. When I turned on Get Up this morning and actually saw a banner across the bottom of the screen that said, what will it take for Bill Belichick to be on the hot seat? I mean, I spit my coffee out.
Spicy.
And then I had to turn the volume up to see. And Greeny very quickly jumped in and was like, look, this was something. I think LeVar Arrington said it on a different network. And so they were basically saying, this is ridiculous, but we feel the need. We have to talk about it. Having said that, though, not that he would ever be on the hot seat, but how much pressure do you think in any way at this point, if any, Bill Belichick feels to do this without Tom Brady and show everyone that this wasn't Tom Brady going to Tampa and he brought the Super Bowls there with him and that Bill Belichick is what we all thought he was, which was really a 50-50 split of genius with Tom Brady in New England?
Well, I think for Belichick, the hot seat would be self-imposed because you talk about team timelines and, he's no spring chicken, Bob. So he's not looking to do a, 8-year rebuild or whatever. I think he would like to compete now. Again, that's sort of evidenced by some of the decisions the New England made in free agency. And it's undeniable that he has not excelled as a drafter in recent years. That was a really generous way to put it. Not
very excelled,
anyway.
Yes.
Not been a good drafter. So I think there's pressure on Bill Belichick, the GM, frankly, because when you look at the last 5 years of New England drafts, they just haven't borne the sort of fruit that set them up for a post-Tom Brady era.
No, I mean, that's why they went out and spent a fortune in free agency, because Bill Belichick, the general manager, has done a terrible job for Bill Belichick, the coach, in terms of giving him talent to work with. You're right. I could talk to you all afternoon. I appreciate it. Thank you for continuing to try to help Dan. It's like pushing the rock up the hill, but, you know, you're a saint for doing that. You guys do such a great job on NFL Live. I love watching you, so thanks for this.
I appreciate that. Thank you so much, Bob.
Appreciate it. Good talking to you. That's Mina Kimes with us here. Bob Wischusen filling in for Max Kellerman on ESPN Radio and ESPN Plus. We'll get back to the telephones. We've got some callers on hold that want to talk about the Conforto thing, and I'm sure also some NFL calls as well. And we'll squeeze in as many calls as we can between now and the top of the hour. And Raj is also going to drive us crazy with one-hit wonders when we come back. We'll explain. That's also coming up.
The Max Kellerman Show, the podcast.
I'm excited for this. It's my first No Doubt.
All right.
Let's go, Raj. Give me the first No Doubt.
Okay, if you're with it, you say No Doubt, and then Bill hit you with that. And if not, you can be like, nah, son, you know.
All right.
You. But check it out, Bob. We got a birthday in the house. That's right, your favorite, Bob. Lil Nas X turns 22 today. Now, this song right here, let me hear this song. His Old Town Road is a top five one-hit wonder ever. I mean, ever.
No. Not No Doubt. No, it's not a top five. Well, first of all, he's 22. I didn't even think – I thought he was like 25. He's 22 years old. How are you the author of a one-hit wonder? Like, what's he going to do for the rest of his life? That's it? He's never putting out another album?
Well, I mean, it's been two years. He could have had a follow-up hit if it was in him.
If he was 52, yeah, I would say I was a one-hit wonder. That was 30 years ago. The dude is 22 years old. Does he not still have a couple of songs in him? A one-hit wonder is, you know, Come On Eileen, Dexy's Midnight Runners. Like, it happened 40 years ago, and you never heard from them again. I'm going to give Lil Nas X the benefit of the doubt that we will hear from him again. So I will say no, that is not a one-hit wonder top five of all time.
Oh, okay, fine. Hey, moving on. Hey, you're with Draymond Green saying that these young players in the NBA are soft as hell.
Yeah, no doubt. This is one I will – like, I want to see young players in the NBA look at what we grew up watching. Look at, like, Knicks, Heat from the 90s, Bulls, Pistons from the 80s. Even the we'll go back and watch the Lakers-Celtics documentary and watch Kevin McHale, you know, like, just lassoing guys under the basket and Kareem squaring off with Larry. Yeah, that doesn't fly now. I mean, there are really no big physical rivalries right now in the NBA, and we grew up and there were a ton of them. So I think Draymond's got a point.
Yeah, he does. I tell you what game got chippy, that Clippers-Suns game. I know it was only late for you, but woo, that was a chippy game. I mean,
Patrick Beverley, I know, got ejected, but, like, that's a common foul in 1994. And he got ejected
for it. There was a hard foul. Yeah, there was a hard foul. I believe Devin Booker, like, elbowed my man Kawhi in the throat for trying to go for another dunk. So that was back in the day, that would have been a common foul. But
Back in the day, that was nothing.
Yep. Hey, students living in Wisconsin University residence halls say that they're being tormented by ghosts. So my question to you, Bob, is ghosts are real?
I mean, fine. If you want to believe in ghosts, you can. I'll say no doubt. Sure.
All right.
You know, there are definitely some things that I like can't explain. So if you want to say that, you know, there's a ghost out there that's in your world, then I mean, I'm a Jet fan. So, obviously, I will say that, yes, there are ghosts that, you know, haunt us for all time. I'm haunted by more than a few.
All right. Hey, and you believe, word on the street, that Jerry Jones is infatuated with Kyle Pitts. You believe that story?
Yeah, I would say no doubt about that one. I don't know if this is going to be enough for him to try to trade up to go get him, because I think he would try to trade up. Maybe a couple of spots. I don't think he's going to be able to go all the way up to where Kyle Pitts is ultimately going to be drafted. But doesn't Kyle Pitts look exactly like the kind of player that Jerry Jones would just dream about at night wearing that star on his helmet? Like, Jerry Jones is always going to dream, I think, about the freakiest player in the draft being on his team regardless of position. And I absolutely think Kyle Pitts is the biggest difference maker in this draft, which is incredible to say about a tight end, but he's just a different breed of tight end than anything we've ever seen before.
Well, I hope you're wrong. I hope you're wrong, because it's just what it needs. We'll score see. 40 points a game just to win, because that defense is a mess.
You know, I enjoyed my first No Doubt. That was fun.
Yeah. Thanks. You did well. My favorite answer from you was the not No Doubt. That was great. We're going to have to make a new segment called Not No Doubt.
It's the Max Kellerman Show, presented by Progressive Insurance. If you missed any part of today's show, then you can always find both hours posted daily as a podcast, available wherever you listen to your podcast. In hour number one, we talked to Dan Orlovsky. This hour, we talked to Mina Kimes. Had a lot about the NFL draft coming up, obviously, and the Sam Darnold trade and what San Francisco could have done, didn't do. That's worth going back to listen to as well. And talking about Justin Rose as well in the Masters the last hour was a lot of fun as well. So we do have time for some calls at 888-SAY-ESPN, 888-729-3776. So if you're on hold, stay right there. If not, we've got some open lines. We will squeeze in as many calls as we possibly can. Between now and the top of the hour, we come back. Bob Wischusen, in for Max, the Max Kellerman Show on ESPN Radio.
The Max Kellerman Show, the podcast.
This is a one-hit wonder. Not Lil Nas X. You're only 22 years old. Your career's still out in front of you. This is a one-hit wonder. Dexy's Midnight Runners? Oh, my God. This is the only song they ever had. Bob Wischusen, in for Max, the Max Kellerman Show on ESPN Radio. ESPN Plus, 888-SAY-ESPN, 888-729-3776. Like, from the R&B world, Ice Ice Baby. That's a one-hit wonder, right? Vanilla Ice, like, that's it. You know, in the rock world, I don't know. How about In a Big Country by Big Country off of their album Big Country? I remember that one. That was the only song they ever had. Tune into an AL East battle tomorrow when the Rays host the Yankees. Coverage begins at 12:30 p.m. Eastern time on ESPN Radio and the ESPN app. Taking you till the top when Shanae and Golic will take over. 888-SAY-ESPN, 888-729-3776. Get as many calls in between now and the top of the hour as we can. Mike in Newport News has been very patient, and he joins us next year on ESPN Radio. What's up, Mike?
Hey, so my quick points on the Conforto situation is this, right? You have guys that are calling the Conforto a cheater. You can't do that. We're not talking about banging trash cans and stealing signs here. All we're talking about is a guy doing his job, trying to gain a competitive advantage by leaning in and trying to dictate and shrink that strike zone. Guys do it all the time, usually from the beginning of the game, because like you said, the strike zone's not official. So you want to gain that batter's advantage, and you want to dictate the way the umpire is going to call that game with a smaller strike zone going forward. And in terms of the umpire, you know, we put onus on umpires in all sports to be perfect and get all the calls right. And generally it doesn't happen that way. But I think that human element in sports is what makes sports so great. You don't always know which way the calls are going to go. You don't always know how it's going to play out. But, you know, keep us on your feet. But unfortunately, every time calls don't go our way, we want to kick and scream for this massive change. But inevitably, what I think that leads to is this can of worms that's going to eventually turn the sports we love into things that are unrecognizable.
Yeah, the one thing in baseball that I really miss from growing up is the colorful manager-umpire argument. And replay has, in many ways, eliminated that from baseball. Because now if there's a really good play, like a guy's out by a foot at first base, and he gets called safe, and the umpire comes out, or the manager comes out, you know, and the Billy Martin, Earl Weaver, nose-to-nose, kick dirt on the umpire's feet, like, you know, what we would be tremendously entertained by growing up watching managers like that. Now they just go to replay. Now they say, put the headset on and get the call right. And I guess ultimately the right thing to do is to get the call right. But managerial arguments with umpires growing up was awesome. You rooted for one of those to happen in a game. They're gone. Let's go to Tyrone in Philly, who joins us next here on ESPN Radio. Bob in for Max. What's up, Tyrone? Got Tyrone? Tyrone going once. Tyrone going twice. Tyrone left us, I guess. Michael in Dallas instead will take over. We'll see if Michael's there on ESPN Radio. Hey, Mike.
Hey, Bob. I want to give you props for a great call out on comparing Justin Rose's tribulations today to Major League Baseball pitcher. It made me remember back to Rick Ankiel back around the turn of the century, who was a highly touted pitcher, pitching for the Cardinals, and then one day he couldn't find home plate with a mask.
Yeah, and, I would think. I think a starting pitcher, or maybe like a closer, like the Mets have gone through this with Edwin Diaz, where he is lights out in Seattle, and they trade for him, and he comes here, and I mean, he can't get anybody out. He gave up game-winning home run after game-winning home run. I don't know that there are many other examples in sports that are similar to what golfers can go through within the course of one tournament or with their career or in the course of one round. It is a game that screws with your brain unlike any other. Again, Bob Wischusen.
Same thing as the reliever, and then Steve Blass way before them.
Yep. Yeah, or even as a position player like Steve Sachs or Chuck Knobloch that couldn't throw the ball to first base. So, yeah, there are certain sports and certain things in certain sports that have so much, like, mental gymnastics around them that you can see professional athletes, the best in the world at times, almost being turned into a pretzel trying to solve the problems that are just between their own ears. And golf shows you that over and over and over again. Even think of Jordan Spieth. Jordan Spieth was the king of the world in the sport of golf 4 years ago. He's 26 years old. He just won at the Valero, and even after that event, went to the podium and said, I wasn't sure if I was ever going to be able to do this again. That's how much he was twisted up and wondering if he was – I mean, he went from the mountaintop to the deepest valley all the way back to rehabilitating his career in the span of like 5 years from 21 to 26 years old. That's golf. You don't really see that in other sports. You either can do it or you can't. In golf, you can do it. Then you can't. Then you figure out a way to do it again. Ed in Pennsylvania joins us next here on ESPN Radio. What's up, Ed?
Hey, man. Real quick, just so you know, you got some major hit bands that only were one-hit wonders. Look at the Grateful Dead. Touch of Grey was their only hit.
Yeah, but that's a badge of honor for them. They probably didn't even want that one hit. Right? Like, the Grateful Dead are about selling out football stadiums and never getting a song on the radio. So, to me, a one-hit wonder is you have that one hit, you are popular as a pure flash in the pan for that one hit, and then we never hear about you again. That's not the Grateful Dead. The Grateful Dead have one of the most ravenous, dedicated, all-time fan bases ever. And if Jerry were to come back tomorrow and they went on tour, they would sell out 80,000-seat football stadiums at the drop of a hat. That's not a one-hit wonder. That's one of the great live acts of all time. Real quick, Richard in Manhattan joins us on ESPN Radio. Hey, Richard.
Bob, in February of 1983, Ed Koch was hosting Saturday Night Live, and he introduced that band to the United States. Bob, was you Dixie's Midnight Riders?
Dixie's Come Midnight on Runners. I'll never forget.
All right. Now, as far as Conforto, the rule is simple. You can make it so easy. You don't need replay. You don't need a robotic umpire. If it's over the plate and a strike, I don't care whether you get hit or not. It's a strike. This way the umpire doesn't have to fix. There's no burden on the umpire to see whether the guy got out of the way, didn't get out of the way, the batter's intent. It doesn't matter.
Well, you're right. It should have been. That should have been what they called, but it's still a judgment call. That's why we still talk. And Richard, thanks for the call. We got to go end of the show. But I mean, it's still a judgment call as to, now if we get to robotic umpires, it's not a judgment call, but it's a judgment call as to whether or not it's a strike. That's why we talk about umpires having different strike zones, right? Again, Roger Bubba, thanks a million for helping me out today. Janae and Golic are coming up next. Had a great time these last couple of days. Look forward to doing it again soon. Bob in for Max on ESPN Radio.
Thanks for listening to the Max Kellerman Show. Make sure you subscribe, rate, and review. You can hear the show live weekdays at 2 p.m. Eastern on ESPN Radio, ESPN News, or wherever you stream your audio.